Parshas Vayakhel begins with a discussion of the contributions of the Jews to the Mishkan in both goods and services. The Torah says, Vayavohu ha'anashim al ha'anashim, the men came with the women. The Torah uses the interesting preposition al. It says they brought jewelry, chach, venezim, v'tabas, v'chumas. Machavrusa notes that the Sfarno explains that the reason the Torah says they came together, not simply men and women, is because the halacha is that a gabbai tzedakah may not accept contributions from women because it's the husband's property and they have no right to give without, at least more than a davar mu'at, without the husband's agreeing. On the other hand, the pasuk, several psukim later, says, V'chali shachach maslev biyadeha tavu, the women spun fabric. Here, no mention is made of the men, and the reason is because midaraisa, the husband is not entitled to his wife's work. Our discussion today will be about the din drabanan, that a husband is entitled to his wife's labors, but midaraisa, there is no such chiyuv. Ramosha in Arachayim, Igros Moshe, Simon Kufnun Ches, emphasizes this. The Gemara in Kedushin says that a woman is not in a position to do kibud avaim, ein sipik biyad lekayim mitzvas kibud avaim, because reshus acherim aleha, her husband's authority, her husband's dominion is over her. Ramosha says, what does that mean? People may assume that it means the work, the labors that she's obligated to do for him, but that's not daraisa, he says. Midaraisa, she has no obligation to him of any sort. So what do we mean reshus acherim aleha? So Ramosha says that the fundamental definition of Nisuin is that a woman's place is with her husband, and therefore she may be unable to attend to her parents because she has to be with her husband, which may contradict her being with the parents. And Ramosha therefore says, in terms of minhag, that a woman's minhag follows her husband, because minhag, as defined by Chazal, refers to the minhag hamakom, and the woman's minhag is with her husband. But again, regarding malacha, there is no chi of malacha to work for a husband. That chiyuv comes midrabanan. The basic obligations of the woman are set forth in the Mishnah in Ksuvus. The Mishnah says, Eilu malacha she'isha osa labala. This is Ksuvus, Samach Aleph Amud Beis. It lists seven malachas. Tachenes, she grinds grain to make flour. V'ofa, she bakes. Mechabeses, laundry. Vasheles, she cooks. Menikas benah, she nurses her child, meaning her child with her husband. Matas la'amita, she makes his bed. Va'osa b'tzemer. The first six malachas are domestic chores. Cooking, baking, laundry. The last one, though, osa b'tzemer, the Gemara explains exactly what she does. She produces wool. She produces fabric out of wool, thread out of wool. That is not a household duty. That is commercial production. She produces this tzemer to raise revenue for the household. And this is a fundamental difference between the first six and the seventh. The first six are simply housework. The seventh is revenue production. And we see there are two dinim in the malacha. There is one din that she has to do certain things, and there's another din that the husband is entitled to her earnings. These distinctions will be important throughout our discussion. The Mishnah proceeds and says, "Hichnisa l'shivcha achas." If she brings in a maidservant, she becomes exempt from three malachas: lo tachenes, lo ofe, lo mechabeses. No grinding, no baking, and no laundry. Shtayim, two maidservants, she's exempt from cooking and exempt from nursing. Shalosh, ein matzas l'amita, ve'en osa b'tzemer. She's off from those two also. No more bed making and no more tzemer. Arba, yoshevet b'katadra. If she has four maidservants, she can simply sit on the couch and do nothing. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel both disagree. They say she has to do something, because Rabbi Eliezer says, Batala mavila de zima, idle hands are the devil's work. It leads to immorality. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is worried instead about psychological degradation. He says, Batala mavila de shimum, to boredom. What is the nafkamina? So the Gemara says, the metala biguraisa katnaisa v'nidarshir. If she's playing with lapdogs or with games of some sort, Ratharashi explains, so there's no boredom because she is keeping herself occupied, but there is zima because this is not work. Most poskim, basically all poskim, rule l'chumra, like Rabbi Eliezer, that we worry about zima, and therefore even games are not sufficient, and she must do certain work. The poskim discuss exactly what she has to do, The implication of the Gemara seems to be that any work, as long as it's not pure leisure activity, is sufficient. There are some poskim who seem to indicate that she has to do certain of the seven malachas, but the pashta seems to be that as long as she's working, that is sufficient to ward off both Zima and Shimum. Of course, it can become difficult to define work. And then there's a common expression that if you love what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life. So presumably, she doesn't necessarily have to work for pay. If she volunteers delivering Tamchei Tzedakah packages, that ought to be fine. But let's say she wants to be an actress. So arguably, you know, the environment might be maybe Lidezima, but she's working, but she may enjoy it. So the punishment don't really define what work would be. If she has a hobby, if she's an athlete, if she's a disciplined athlete, then that might also be maybe Lidezima. But the punishment don't really define, again, what's considered work. But a woman does have to do some work. It's clear that she cannot simply sit on the couch all day and do nothing but read novels. But again, if she wants to study Shakespeare or study something seriously, that might be sufficient. Poskim don't give us that much guidance in this regard. One introduction, by the way, before we proceed. We're going to be using terms like the woman must do this, the husband may compel her to do that. It really is not ideal. It is not recommended for a couple to base their marriage on what can I compel you to do, what must you do, what must I do. Ideally, the husband and the wife should be able to discuss things, should share goals, should be able to come to a harmonious and mutually satisfactory revolutions. Nevertheless, we are discussing here the law, we are discussing the baseline of what each party has the absolute legal right to force the other to do. And that's important for discussion, certainly in marriages that are breaking up and we have to, and that the marriage is no longer successful. But nevertheless, it is not recommended that everyone go home and try to structure his marriage based on these strict requirements. Another interesting point, minor digression, is that as we have seen, menika is bina, nursing is one of the malachas. And it is clear indeed from the halacha that nursing is an obligation, a conjugal obligation that the woman has to the husband. It is not a right of the child. A woman actually has no child support, child maintenance obligations in halacha. Those fall solely on the father. The halacha is that a divorcee need not nurse, need not take care of the child. She can simply take the child, take him to Beis Din and say, not interested, tell the father to take care of him, you take care of him, it's not my responsibility. A couple of parshiyos ago, Parshas Vayera, in the Leinu L'Shabbach, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, he brings a pshat from Rav Chaim. The Torah says that they made a mishteh b'yom higamal es Yitzchak. When Yitzchak was weaned, when he was two, they made a party. And Rashi brings a famous medrash that there had been rumors swirling that Yitzchak was actually a foundling and not Sarah and Avram's child. So Sarah disproved this by nursing various other children of other Gentile women. So Rav Chaim asks, why did they wait till the Mishteh B'yom HaGamal Es Yitzchak to do this? Why do they not do this much earlier and nip these rumors in the bud? So Rav Chaim says, because if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam actually says in the Halachas of Nursing, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say, a woman may not nurse another child along with her husband's child because the child has the exclusive right to the milk. Therefore, says Rav Chaim, Sarah could not have nursed any other children as long as Yitzchak was still nursing because of this halacha that a child has the exclusive right to his mother's milk as long as he is nursing. The problem is, as we have seen, this seems to be a category error. There is no right of a child to his mother's milk. A divorcee need not nurse her child at all. The entire right occurs in the framework of the conjugal obligations that a woman has to her husband. It's the husband's right. And the Medrash Rabbah actually says that Avram was the one who pushed Sarah to do this. Avram said Sarah actually was a little bashful. This wasn't the sort of thing they would encourage in Beis Yaakov, to go out and nurse strange children at public parties. Avram said, no, this is not the time for tznius. It's important to make this Kiddush Hashem. So if Avram was on board and the entire obligation is one of his rights, Sarah clearly could have done this earlier. Possibly Rav Chaim simply meant that you see from the halacha that it's bad for the child and therefore they don't want to do anything bad for the child, but that would kind of eviscerate the brisker bite of the vart. But anyway, these are the seven malachas that a woman is obligated to do for her husband. The way the Rambam structures, from a slightly higher bird's eye view, the Rambam says there are various obligations. The man becomes obligated to do 10 things for his wife, and he's zoche in 4 things. The 10 things include she'erksus va'ona, mizonos, ksus, ksuva, various other things, refuah, pidyon, and he's zoche in 4 things. One of them is ma'asi yadayim, another is mitzia. We will discuss that a little bit later. Now, As we have seen, if the woman brings maidservants in, then she becomes exempt from doing certain malachas. And the Gemara says, not only if she brings actual maidservants, even if she simply brings a dowry, brings enough money, that people of that financial level would tend to have maidservants, that also exempts her from doing those malachas. Now, obviously, in modern Western societies, we don't actually have maidservants, but many poskim say that maids, or not actual servants, but maids, are in the same category, and therefore if the family has maids, that would be if they have enough money to hire maids, that also exempts the woman from doing certain malachas. Now, what about families that don't have maids? But there are still certain malachas that we tend not to do ourselves, or at least people of certain financial capacities don't do themselves. For example, laundry or cleaning. Some women, some families will do it themselves. Some will give it to laundry services or dry cleaners. What about cooking? Some people cook all their own food. Some people will order out or order prepaid meals. So that's not a question of maids or servants, but it is something that the women tend not to do themselves. Obviously, grinding would certainly fall into that category. None of us grind our own wheat, except for Pesach sometimes, for matzah. So this brings us to another category of cases where women don't have to do certain malachas. The Gemara talks about nursing, and the Gemara says that if either the custom of the husband's family or the custom of the woman's family is that they don't nurse, then the woman need not nurse. The rule is ola imo veni aredes imo. She gets the better of the more favorable of the two minhagim, and she need not nurse if that is not her family's custom or his family's custom. The Gemara is talking specifically about nursing, but most poskim extend this to other malachas. The German Rishonim, the Hagos Maimonides, the Mardechai, the Hagos Ashri, all say that our women in medieval Germany, do not grind, and neither do we in modern America, and they also don't do laundry. Many of our women do laundry, but I guess in those days they gave it to, either had maids or they gave it to laundry services. So many poskim say that these malachas, which were not the custom, these are the two examples they mostly give, grinding and laundry, the women need not do. And this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Siman Pei, kol elu hamalachos, ein mechayv anosa, elim kei nia derech mishpachto, mishpachto la'asosan. That there is an opinion in the poskim that this is limited to nursing, but as we have explained, most poskim say this applies to all malachas. And the Beis Yosef in a tshuva in Siman Tezvav and the Radvaz in his tshuvas in Shin Yud Ches both underscore this is a different rule than the rule of the Shvachas. They both say that in either case, the woman will be patura. Either if her family or his family has sufficient financial resources that it would be customary to have maids, or even if they are poor, but if their lifestyle, if their custom is simply not to do laundry, even if they can't afford maids, that's also a patur. So this is probably more common that even families that don't tend to have maids, but if the families come from a culture where certain malachas are not done by the woman herself, then she would not have to do it, then they'll have to somehow make do and find some way to do it, even if they are not particularly well off. What if the husband or the wife don't particularly want this arrangement? Now, by arrangement, we refer to the fact that Chazal say, Tiknu mizonaseh tachas matzi yadeh. We mentioned earlier, the Rambam says there are 10 obligations the husband has to the wife, and there are 4 that she has to him. One of his is mizonos, to provide her with food, and one of her, and hers is malacha, and those correspond. As we mentioned, malacha is definitely drabanan. Mizonos is a major machlokes rishonim. Some poskim say it's daraisa, some drabanan, but either way, Chazal tell us that these two correspond. And Rav Huna therefore says, Yichola ha'isha lomer labayla, eni nizonos ve'eni yosa. I wish to waive this arrangement, and the Gemara explains, Kitakina rabbanan mizoni ikar. The ikar, the primary point of Chazal, was to give her mizonos, and they gave him masi yadayim mishum eva, and therefore, since she is the primary beneficiary of this arrangement, she has the right to waive it and say, I'd rather keep my money and I'll take care of my own mizonos. And this is how we paskin that a woman can say, eni nizonos ve'eni yosa. There are several important disputes among the Rishonim, which are also brought by the later poskim, about how this works. One important machlokas is, can the woman go back and forth? Can she say, okay, now I have a good job, I'll keep my salary, and I don't need mizonos. Tomorrow I'm out of a job, tomorrow I'll go back and say, okay, now you take care of me. So the Ran, citing Ra'ah, says no. Why? Basically, this is elo fair. He says, laksa midas hadin. simply go back and forth like this is not fair to the husband. Other Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yeruchim, say, no, why not? The same way when Chazal made this initial arrangement, it may very well be not fair to the husband. The husband may, over the course of the marriage, lay out much more money feeding her than he takes in from her paltry Masi Yadayim. Indeed, the Rush, the Poskim say that in Chazal's times, it was typical that a woman's earnings would not suffice for her maintenance, and the husband therefore has the short end of the staff. So Chazal wanted to do that. They weren't worried about fairness. So why is it any less fair if the woman goes back and forth? Both these opinions are brought by the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch. There is no clear hachra of the Ramah, and I haven't really seen a clear hachra in the poskim. Presumably, the husband would be the muksuk, and he could say, once you say any zonas, I don't have to allow you to go back, and I'm not going to provide you with any maisi yadayim. Another important machlokas is whether ksus, clothing, is included in this arrangement or not. Some poskim say that if the woman says any zonas, she forfeits ksus also, and she has to buy her own clothes. Other poskim say no. The woman can say, any zonas, any os, any zonas. I don't need food, so I'll take care of my own food. But you still have to go shopping for me. You still have to buy me dresses. A third machlokas is whether a woman has to do housework if she says any zonas vaniyosa. As we have seen, there are two basic categories of ma'asi yadayim: domestic chores and revenue production. Some poskim say that any zonas means she's not going to produce revenue, and she'll take care of her own mazonas. She'll work and she'll make money and she'll provide for her own mazonas. But housekeeping is a completely separate issue, and that she always has to do. Other poskim say no. All malacha is connected mizonis. If she doesn't want mizonis, she doesn't have to do any malacha. She can sit there and do nothing, except, as we mentioned, that she has to do some malacha to ward off boredom and zima. Here, there does seem to be something of a consensus. While not all poskim agree, the Chalchas Mechokek and the Beis Shmuel both say that since it's a safek, we cannot force the Isha to do housework. This is also the conclusion of a psak din, issued by three very illustrious dayanim, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, Rav Adya Hadaya, and Rav Yosef Shalom Elyashev, in the Piskei Din of the Rabbanut, Volume 2, Page 3. What about the husband? Can the husband abrogate this arrangement and say, Tzi'i mat yedechem mezona secha? I'm not going to support you, just keep your money and feed yourself. So the Gemara basically says it depends. The Gemara in Ksuvus and Hamadir says that he can, but if it's low safka, if her earnings turn out to be insufficient, he has to make up the difference. So he definitely can say, if they fall short, he definitely still remains responsible. But the Gemara seems to indicate that he can say, you take care of it and come back to me. You keep your own money and buy your own food and come back to me if it doesn't work out. So the Shulchan Aruch brings the Gemara that that normally he cannot say this. And the Ramah says, but he can if it's enough and if he agrees to make up the shortfall. The Beis Shmuel actually claims that there are poskim who say that the husband can never do it, even if he's willing to make up the shortfall. A husband can never simply tell the woman, you take care of yourself and come back to me for shortfalls. But the Beis Meir says no, that at least in the case where the husband is around and available to take care of her, everyone agrees that he can do this. There is one other possible way that this arrangement can be abrogated, and that is through essentially a prenuptial. The Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that almost all the mutual conjugal obligations can be abrogated through a siluk, through an agreement by the husband and wife at the marriage or before the marriage or during the erusin, that they do not wish that the marriage should include some or another takana of chazal. There are certain exceptions, but ma'asi yadayim and mezonos are not one of them, and the husband and wife therefore could sign an agreement that the woman should retain her own earnings, that the husband will not have to support her. If they don't, then it depends on which party wants to abrogate later, as we have explained earlier. Now, this is the basic background of the halachas as they appear in the Gemara, in the Rishonim, and the early poskim. How does this apply to Bizman Hazeh? Clearly, producing tzemer is not what most women are capable of doing, are interested in doing. It's not viable. That's not what our women do. So in terms of modern malachas, office work or other kinds of work that women typically do, we have two basic questions that we need to discuss. What sorts of malachas must a woman do bizman hazeh? What sorts of malachas can a husband demand that his wife do? Other than that, the housework is roughly the same, except for the question of minhag. But in terms of the revenue producing malacha, what can the husband ask his wife to do? And B, closely interrelated question, what sorts of revenues is the husband entitled to of his wife? What sorts of jobs of profits that she makes will he be entitled to, and what sorts will he not be entitled to? So first, a little background. There are basically three categories relevant to us of income or revenue produced by a woman that the husband is entitled to. Up till now, we have been discussing Maisi Yadayim. A second category is called Moser Maisi Yadayim, or Hadafa sometimes, extra Maisi Yadayim, above and beyond. The Mishnah gives basic levels of how much tzemer in the time of Chazal, how much tzemer she had to produce, and beyond that is called Moser Maisi Yadayim. There are other kinds of Moser the Gemara talks about, if she takes extra jobs, if she works several jobs simultaneously. The details of Moser and Hadafa are rather complicated. We will not get into them. We will just note that many Achronim accept the ruling of the Bach, that the Minhag is, Bizman Hazeh, and up till today, is that anything which is considered Moser Maisi Yadayim, the woman keeps. The Chazon Ish actually does not like this. He says he can't just have a minhag to go against the halacha, but the consensus of most poskim, Beis Shmuel, Chof Mechokik, Bach, and later poskim, Marsham, is that anything which leaves the category of Maisi Yadayim and is considered Moser Maisi Yadayim, we will not be motzi from the woman. At least misafek, we will allow her to keep it. The third category is called mitzia. If the woman finds something on the ground, she finds a dollar, she finds a lottery ticket, mitzia also goes to the husband. It is not the same takana as Maisi Yadayim, it is a separate takana, but he also is zocha in her mitzia. There's actually a machlokas. If the husband is not supporting her, does he still get mitzia or not? That is a machlokas rishonim, and it is generally considered to be a sveika d'dina. Now, regarding other malachas that a woman does, there is a major machlokas in Baba Basra. The context is actually an almana, whose Maisi Yadayim also go to the heirs. They support her and they get her Maisi Yadayim, similar to a husband, although with some important differences. There's a major machlokas rishonim. What happens to a woman who, instead of doing tzemer, she works using the assets, the real estate or the cash, and she invested in business of her dead husband, meaning of the Yisomim, that they inherited her husband's estates, and she generates a profit by doing business with her husband's property. Does she get the profits, or do they? So the Rashbam says that as long as they are providing her with mezonos, they, the heirs, the husband's estate, gets her revenue, just like a husband gets the revenue of his wife. The Ravid and the Rashba disagree. They're brought by the Torah and Simon Sadihei. They, and the Rashba's in a couple of tshuvas, they disagree very strongly. They say that the only Maisi Yadayim which go to the heirs or to the husband is the ones Chazal established, weaving and spinning. But other malachas, she'ein darka b'kach, the Ravid says, which are not the custom of women to do, kivan she'ena yecholim l'shanos l'osa malacha, since they or the husband would have no right to force her to do that, if she generates revenue through such malacha, harehu la'atzma. And the Rashba says this at much greater length. The Rashba says, isha ena chayeves, a woman is not obligated l'troach, to matriach herself, listar v'livnos, to tear down and to build, lakar v'lintoa, to uproot, to plant, v'lalahaskar klum, to rent things out, v'lasasik baribis, and to engage in banking, money lending, elalasit b'tzemer, kitzvah shnirim v'shasenu. The only thing she has to do is tzemer. If the Baal wants her to do anything else, he's not allowed to. She's not his servant, who he can say, her slave, do this, do that. Chazal gave him one right, that she can make tzemer. If she's not doing tzemer, that's it. No further rights, no further rights. And anything else she does, therefore, she is entitled to all the revenue of her work. The Rashba then suggests that maybe if at the time she should have been working for the Yisum and making Tzemer, if instead she was doing this work, maybe the Yisum should be entitled to this because she should have been working for them. What right does she have to work for herself instead? The Rashba says no. Even if they would have the right to ask her to do Tzemer, b'di'eved, their only right is Tzemer. But the effort, if she did not do tzemer, she is entitled to keep all the revenue for what she produced from all these malachas. Now, there are major differences of opinion how to understand this Rashba. We will see some of them as we proceed. One important point to note is that the Ravid, which is based on the source of the Rashba, the Ravid said, ein darka b'kach, that this applies to malachas which are not customary for women to do. If there are malachas that are customary for her to do, maybe the Rashba and the Ravid don't apply. On the other hand, the Rashba seemed to emphasize that the only thing they have the right to ask for is tzemer, kitzvah, shnirim, shesenu. Semer, the Chazal were kavet semer, and Chazal gave certain very specific directions for how much and what kind of malacha. Anything else, not. So it's not entirely clear from these Rishonim whether they're really limiting the Mishnah only to semer and anything else she keeps, or whether they're simply saying that things which are not women's work, which are not typical, were never included in the Takanas Chazal. So, moving to the Achronim, what sorts of malachas must a woman do b'zman hazeh? So one of the most important Ma'ar Mekomos here is the Beis Meir, in the beginning of Siman Pei. Beis Meir says, a woman is not mechuyevus to do anything except semer. Even though women typically do other things, he says, his examples are harisha and zriya, plowing and planting, or he says, bizmanenu, business, he says, certainly traveling to the shvakim, going on business trips. He says, even though minhagim kain, they do this, meritzonim hatov, this is normal today, he says, nevertheless, eina kofa el litvos b'tzemer. The only thing he has the right to demand legally is production of tzemer. He brings the right from the Rashba, he says, that's what the Rashba says, that nothing but tzemer is the Baal's right. And even the Chalkim on the Rashba, he says, only said that if she does them, he will get the revenue. But l'chatchila, everyone agrees, he says, that a husband may not ask his wife to do anything except tzemer. Many Acharim disagree. Typical is the position of Rav Shaul Yisraeli, in notes printed in the back of the Sefer Mishpatech Yaakov. He argues very strongly that today the whole society is different, he says. Today women study professions even before they're married. His examples are office work, avodas misrad, omiktzoyas madayim, scientific technical fields, he says. So he says that's what they're expected to do. That's what they have to do. He repeatedly limits this, he says, to things which are compatible to their household, other household duties. When she's free of her domestic duties, such as raising kids, he says, but anything which is compatible with her domestic character, she must do, and the husband gets the Masi Yadayim, unless she says, any zonas venias, but she is obligated to do work, provided such work is compatible with her household duties. But the contemporary posts can come then all over the map on this. The Piskei Din Rabbaniim have a psak of other day on the just opposite, following the Beis Meir, Piskei Din, page 223, that he says only tzemer, he says, no matter how, even if the isha is mechsheres lezeh to do something else, and many women do it, kamen nashim oskes bezeh, you have the Rashba, you have the Beis Meir, that's it, nothing but tzemer, no matter how normal or how capable the woman is, nothing, he cannot ask her for anything but making wool, working on wool. The Piskei Choshen, Rabbi Blau, in the Ishus, in Perek Yud HaRates, he takes a position, he's very uncomfortable with women working specifically outside the house. He says, really, you know, kol kvud bas melech panima, even though it's not osur for them to work, he says, but he uses the language of ein alafi ruach hachamim. Not really so appropriate, he says. And it's a get rachok midas atznias, he says, things like shopkeeping and office work, and there are many mechsholim, he says. Rabbi Blau is not a fanatic, but he is in Yerushalayim. He actually writes, he says, I remember, he says, several decades ago, many of the Nikiya Hadass in Yerushalayim, he says, would go out themselves to the Makola to do the shopping rather than the women go out, he says, because he says they were mochel on their kavod and their tircha because it's tznias. Better the woman stay home and the man should go out and do the shopping himself. Now, arguably, he might have said that in Yerushalayim 50 years ago where the risk to the man was fairly low. Arguably today, with the way streets are today, and in Chutzlar, certainly, and even in Yerushalayim, maybe it's better the man should stay home. It's hard to draw conclusions, but Rabbi Blau is very uncomfortable with the idea of women working b'chlal, and even though it's not osur, he says it's not mistaver that the husband can force his wife to do such a thing. And he's really not sure. He's really not sure whether a man can tell his wife to do such things, which are really against the typical role the Chazal assigned toward women. The Tzar Poskim actually brings various Poskim, I think Hasidish Poskim, who use even stronger language, this is so terrible, they say, office work, work outside the home, there are kalkaris, they say, this is such a bad idea, certainly he can't force her to do this. So again, we have several positions. The Beis Meir says, based on the Rashba, nothing but tzemer, and other contemporary Poskim also say that only tzemer. Rabbi Yisraeli says anything they can do which is compatible with family life, they're obligated to do. And some poskim, like the Piskei Choshen and some of the Chassidish poskim, distinguish between things which are outside the house and not tzanua, versus things which are inside the house. Perhaps as long as they're tzanua and don't involve mingling with men, even if they're not strictly tzemer, she would have to do. Rav Shlomo Shimshon Karelitz in that Tara Shlomo in Volume 1, Siman Chaf Gimel, also takes for granted that a woman does not have to do anything, certainly not outside the house, he says. His examples are, he was writing a while ago, I guess, but Tfira Babatim Zarim, going out and doing sewing works as a seamstress in other people's houses, Abachanuyas. Again, he seems to imply that if she could have stuff brought to her and stay in her house and not go running around, that maybe she would be Mukhiyavas to do, but to go gallivanting and doing work outside the home, that is something that she would not have to do. So this is the discussion of what sorts of things must she do and what sorts of things can she say, I don't have to do because I'll set it tzemer. Assuming she is working, though, and she does generate a salary, is the husband entitled to that salary b'zman hazeh in typical contemporary domestic arrangements? So this is a famous machlokas between the Marit and the Mishnah LeMelech. The Marit is in Chelek Bey, is actually in Choshen Mishpat, Simon Samach Zayin. Marit goes back and forth on this question. He's talking about women who were the main breadwinners of the home. The way he describes them are gviras v'nechnasas b'chatzeras sari malachim. They're wealthy or noble, and they mingle in the halls of power, the royalty and noblemen v'tirosam v'hema ka'ani yosocher v'havi teref levesam v'chalkum esbalei, and they support the family. So are they entitled to their own revenues, or can the husband say, it's all mine, chazal masakin, that I'm entitled to my wife's earnings? So the Marit cites a Ramban. This is also the position of the Rashba and the Magen Mishnah, and the Shulchan Aruch actually brings it. They all say that, as we've seen earlier, Chazal Masakein, Masi Adayim, corresponding to Mizonos, and therefore the woman can waive them, since they are corresponding obligations. The Ramban says also, if the husband, for whatever reason, is not providing her with Mizonos, he's out of town, he's not available, he doesn't have the money, even if she doesn't ask, the Ramban says, even if she doesn't, not Tavea the husband, but if Lamaisa he is not providing her with Mizonos, he thereby forfeits any right to his wife's earnings. Says the Marit, in this case of the woman, who is the main breadwinner of the home, or at least the sole breadwinner, main is a little more complicated, but at least in the case where she's the sole breadwinner, he's not providing her Mizonos. She's bringing in all the household income, and all the food is coming from her earnings. So according to the Ramban, the Marit suggests maybe he shouldn't get her earnings. But he goes back and forth, and he has a couple of svaras why he should get her earnings. One of the svaras seems to be that she's machelas. Even though the Ramban says that if she's not tovah, as long as he's not providing Masi Adayim, as long as he's not providing Mizonos, she still keeps her own Masi Adayim. But Lamaisa, in a marriage where the money goes into the joint bank account and it goes to household expenses, she doesn't consider herself to be missing her Mizonos. She's saying, okay, if you're not bringing them in, they're coming from my Masi Adayim. That's not considered a woman who is not being supported, even though the support is ultimately coming from her salary. Marit himself, the language is not actually so clear which way he's being machriya, but many later achronim cite the Marit as ruling that the husband keeps her Masi Adayim. Some achronim wonder why, but they point out that the Knesset Gdola, who was a Talmud Muvak of the Marit, cites the Marit as having ruled that the husband keeps the Masi Adayim, even though the Knesset Gdola's real access to Marit seems to have been only through the Tshuvas, and the Tshuvas are not very clear, but many or most achronim accept that the ruling of the ultimate ruling of the Marit is that the husband keeps the Masi Adayim. The Mishnah LeMelech disagrees in the beginning of Perachah Aleph and Ishus. He brings the Rashba that we saw before. He says that the Rashba says that the takana of Masi Adayim that the Baal gets is only tzemer. Anything else is not Masi Adayim, and therefore the woman should keep it. The Mishnah LeMelech is actually very unclear, and there is tremendous controversy over how to understand the debate between the Marit and the Mishnah LeMelech, because after all, as we have seen earlier, there are three categories: Masi Adayim, Moser Masi Adayim, and Mitzia. And Mitzia, certainly the husband does get. So many poskim argue that we should look at additional revenue she raises as Mitzia. Some poskim say that we should look at them as Moser Masi Adayim, which is a big machlokes Rishonim and Achronim, had a paskin. But again, there are poskim who say that we should categorize any work that she does other than Semer as Moser Masi Adayim. As we've seen, the consensus of the poskim is that she will keep the Masi Adayim. So basically, in summary, there are three reasons why a woman b'zman hazeh may keep her earnings. First, there's the svara entertained by the Marit that, based on the Ramban, that since he is not supporting her, he is not entitled to her Masi Adayim. Second is the svara based on the Rashba that anything which is not Tzemer is not included in Masyadayim, and therefore the woman will keep it. Third, even if it is considered Masyadayim, it is considered Moser Masyadayim, since it's beyond what Chazal were actually kaveh in terms of the limited amount of Tzemer. And Moser Masyadayim, the minig according to most Achronim, is that the woman will be entitled to keep it. Rav Shaul Yisraeli again takes a much more extreme position. Maybe an extreme is not the right word, but he takes a much more, which called husband favorable position. He says, no, everything the woman does, he says, today, these things are all exactly analogous to Asiyas Tzemer. He writes again, as long as they're family compatible, as long as they don't interfere and they're compatible with her domestic duties, Hakol kebab b'makom uvetmura, printed in boldface in the sefer, in exchange, instead of osim lachas shekavu chazal, and she is going to keep them. The various other achronim are also mafakfik on the Rashba. The Marsham and Chelek Dalad Simon Sadi Beis has many objections to the Rashba. He argues that the Rashba himself is disagreeing with other Rishonim, and he himself is conceding that the Ragadoli Rishonim against him, and he's not actually so sure of what he says, and he writes that these malachos should not be considered mitziah, they could be considered mamish masiyadayim. And again, the contemporary poskim are split. You can find in the Piskei Din and other contemporary poskim very different positions. Some poskim, like Rav Shaul Yisraeli, that these malachos are considered the modern equivalent of tzemer, and therefore the husband is entitled to the malacha. Other poskim say that they're not. They're like Moser Masyadayim, and she'll be entitled to them. And the third possibility is that, the third question is that regardless of how we classify them as Masyadayim or Mitziah or Moser Masyadayim, you have the Svar of the Marit, that if he isn't supporting her, if she is the sole breadwinner, then either like the Ramban, that he's not, since he's not providing her Mizonos, she will keep her Masyadayim, even real Masyadayim, certainly Moser Masyadayim and Mitziah according to some Rishonim. Or other Acharim use the expression that there's an implicit declaration of Eini Zonos Veini Yosa. Since she isn't supporting her, it's as if she automatically means to say Eini Zonos Veini Yosa. And therefore, there is a big machlokes Rishonim, a big machlokes Aposkim, as to how to treat the earnings of women who are the sole and possibly even the main family breadwinner.